Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
Inside the HananiahAutos.com studios at Everbank Field. This is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman. Tony Baselli is on assignment. The hot donut sign is on at Krispy Kreme. Maybe. He might not be in earshot. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Throw a 1-800 in front of it if you're outside of the area.
He's
going
to find out about that.
I know he will, probably. Here's what we're getting into tonight. First week of OTAs in the books. 3 practices out of 10 are down. We'll talk about George Yarno today. The announcement that he has been diagnosed with cancer. We'll get to that coming up. Recap of the first week of practice, the Chris Clemens debate. Is it worth a debate? We'll talk about that. A new segment featured tonight as well, Scout's Eye. Jeff, you had a chance to sit down with Kyle O'Brien.
I did.
Director of College Scouting. We'll get to that tonight as well. We'll look around the National Football League, some big notes around the league this week, and the AFC South as well. We'll get you ready for next week's second round of OTA practices, 3 on the schedule next week, including 1 open to the public on Thursday. So here we are, Jaguars Thursday. The big news today, of course, Jeff, starts off at the end of practice when the Jaguars announced publicly that George Yarno has been diagnosed with cancer. Yarno did not address the media once. The media kind of respect his privacy here, but really kind of sent a shockwave through the organization.
Well, I mean, any time that somebody gets a prognosis, diagnosis, whatever you want to call it like that, I mean, that's an eye-opener, you know. And George Yarno's been a good football coach in the league for quite some time, was a heck of a player, a versatile player when he was playing. I'm sure that him and his family are dealing with quite a bit.
Gus Bradley had some comments right at the start of his press conference after practice today and said that yesterday Yarno went back to the doctor, got the diagnosis and some treatment options too, and some positive signs moving forward.
After being informed in the news yesterday, he did receive some really positive news. So we were holding off. We did have a team meeting. We talked about it, but he's received some positive news on his treatment options and how we're going to go about attacking this. He's confident in the treatment plan, felt really good at the initial part of it, and so the plan that the doctors have, and he's actually excited about it, you know, about getting after this battle that he's at. And I think for us to know that he just has our full support and through this whole thing.
George Yarno, the second-year offensive line coach for the Jags. I walked around the locker room today and talking to each of the offensive linemen. You talked to a guy like Austin Pastor. He basically taught Austin how to play tackle.
Sure. Yeah. You know, hey, George is, he's got a lot in front of him right now, you know, but there were some key words there that Gus talked about, you know, where he went to the doctor and he got kind of a plan from the doctor. You know, George Yarno, to his core, is a football player.
That's right.
And when you're a football player, football coach, what you'd like to have is coaching, number one, and number two is a plan, game plan. And it sounds like he's got a game plan to attack, and that's kind of paraphrasing a little bit what Gus Bradley said, but that's got to feel good if you're George Yarno that you have a plan and a game plan to attack what you're going to be fighting.
So our thoughts certainly with George Yarno and his family moving forward. We won't chase this story too much out of the respect for Yarno and his family. That's kind of the wishes on that front. When there's news there, of course, we will let you know. Now let's move along, Jeff, to football on the field this week. 3 practices in the books. Let's take off your player hat for a moment and put on a coach/personnel hat. What do you want to see after 3 OTA practices, and is this up to par so far?
Well, you want to see the conditioning level increase because now they're kind of getting into it. Another thing is you want to see the efficiency of the operation run. You want to see some of these young guys start to do some of the meat and potatoes of your offense and defense to I don't want to say make it routine because it takes a while to make it routine, but to make it easier to where they could start to advance with different plays, different formations.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a progression. You know, you get 10 days of on-the-field activities, and then after that you've got a mandatory mini camp, so really you get 13 days on the field. So that's not a lot, but you want to make sure that you utilize every day that you're allotted. And I think they took a big step forward this week.
We'll hear from Gus Bradley again right now after a practice today. He said, you know, this is starting to come together as a team after 3 days on the practice field.
I think that we're coming together as a team, and that's what you would hope. We always talk about owning the offense, owning the defense, and the players owning it. We're not there yet. But I do feel like there's better communication taking place. I think last year we talked about the communication. Well, that's becoming a strength. I think we're becoming better communicators on the field. I think the players really enjoy playing with, you know, on the field with one another. And, you know, those are all things that we're looking at as a team, too.
Well, I guess positive as always, but this is a little different feel after week one of OTAs this year than week one of OTAs last year. We keep going back to that.
You've got an established system.
That's right.
You know, so you're building on it. You know, so you expect certain guys to carry the new guys along, get them up to speed. But, you know, you could see that there was clearly a big step taken today because, and I know you were standing right there and you were watching it. But to me, when you start to get a competitive situation where it's offense versus defense. And I don't know if you noticed that particular 7-on-7 drill mm-hmm. where it was a competition.
Sure.
You know, they were keeping track of who was winning what, you know. And so when you get to that point where you're not so much worried about focusing in on making sure that everybody knows what they're doing to where, okay, we know what we're doing now.
Let's keep score.
Now we can keep score and compete to elevate the play within ourselves. I mean, that's what you're looking for, and you could see that they made that progress this week to get to that point today.
It's interesting to watch. Towards the end, there's the period at the very end where the younger players get in there.
Yeah, it's a team period with mostly young players, and that's what they're trying to do is
call it an opportunity period is what it's called.
It's repetitions
and
figure it out quick, or you're going to get left behind and be gone.
The idea for Gus Bradley is to have some of the guys who are on the first and second string maybe out on the side coaching up some of these guys that get a chance in that team period, and that helps build some team chemistry and camaraderie too.
Well, I mean, this is the opportunity. I mean, the last thing in the world that you want to have happen is in the last period or the last couple periods of an OTA practice is to have Paul Posluszny, Chad Henne, Toby Gerhart out there. You know, they've been running around, they're tired, and then have something happen bad, like that's what's right. happened around the league with Sean Lee with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to have something like that happen. So get the young guys out there, get them the reps because they're the ones that need it the most, and let the other guys kind of just, I don't want to say coach because that's not their job, but to help the younger guys along.
Of course, the guy you see a lot of times doing that, no matter the situation at practice, is a guy like Cecil Shorts III, who's always in the
upper huddles. He had a fantastic day today, by the way.
Yeah, and he's been like that the whole time.
Well, he had a lot of opportunities today. There were three rookies that were not at practice today.
Yep.
Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, and Blake Bortles were not there. They were out in California.
Yeah, they're
I believe.
All in L.A. at the NFLPA rookie premiere where they go around to different card companies and different events in L.A.
Yeah, and that's good for them. I mean, it's a great opportunity for them. So, I mean, they're out there enjoying it.
Well, as a coaching staff, though, you want the rookies here as much as you can get them, so they'll be back on Monday and ready to roll again. Losing a day like that, it's pretty valuable, right? Or is it? No?
AJP, I mean, these three guys are going to be on the football team, right?
It's competition.
Well, it's competition.
It's always competition.
But it's also reality. I mean, Dave Caldwell drafted those three guys in the top two rounds. They're going to be on the football team.
That's true.
You know, and it was very clear that they've got the ability. They missed one day. And from what I understand is that they had an option to not go, but if they did not go, they were not allowed to be at an OTA practice or something. And I'm not completely clear on that, but from the way I understand it, that's how it is.
I remember last year, Denard Robinson went last year. I remember that. And I don't know if Joe
By the way, his shoelaces are still not tied.
Yeah, so I think they're tied a different way so they aren't flying all over.
And just to comment about him, have you seen him have a drop yet?
No.
In 3 days at an OTA.
Knock on wood. But, yes, 3 days, they're – no.
I have not seen Denard Robinson drop a pass yet
bigger
in the
top.
3 days of OTA. Well, I don't know if he's bigger up top.
Well,
I didn't break out the tape measure like you do, measuring ankles and body parts. But
well, they said it five times.
Hey, look,
put on 20 pounds.
Well, you know, look,
what do you want?
I don't know how much weight he needs to put on, but you know, he can weigh whatever. But if he's going to get on the field, he's got to learn to catch.
Yeah,
I mean, as a running back / OW, offensive weapon, he's got to learn to catch. He's had a really good start to the OTAs. That's probably one of the things that has jumped out at me the most is how well he's catching the ball. Now, it doesn't sound good all the time, but he's catching the ball.
And Gus Bradley addressed that the first day of practice. Hey, you know, okay, it's one day. Yeah, he didn't drop anything today. Let's see what happens tomorrow.
But, hey, that's the reality. You're gonna watch it. Every time the ball is thrown to Denard Robinson, you're paying attention because of how many times that he struggled with that last year. Now, struggle with it sometimes in games, but, I mean, we saw it in practice continuously. He's made a big improvement in that area.
One of the big storylines this week, first week of OTAs, this is Jaguars Thursday, by the way, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman. Chris Clemens is the only one of 90 players not in attendance. It is a voluntary practice session, of course, this week. It seemed to take Gus Bradley a little bit by surprise on Tuesday when Clemens wasn't around. And then he said he talked to Chris Clemens on Tuesday night into Wednesday, had a better understanding of what it was, some personal business going on this week, couldn't make it. And now today, after practice, Bradley said that he has a clear understanding of when exactly Clemens will be back in the fold.
One thing I know about Chris Clemens, he'll be ready to go, and he's in shape. He had some things, like I told you before, I feel better now about his situation, and he assured me that he'll be here Sunday. I'm saying with 98% confidence he'll be here.
Yep, 98%. Sounds pretty good for next week. And it just seemed like early in this process on Tuesday, I don't know if you heard the comments on Tuesday, Jeff, but that this might be a little bit of an issue coming up, but it seems to be smoothed over now, whatever.
With Clemens?
Yeah.
Nah.
No?
I mean, you know,
that's the media creation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I think in the day and age in the NFL, even though it's voluntary, a lot of coaches, a lot of media members expect him to be there, but he's not required to be there. Look, I don't know what's going on with Chris Clemens, if he has things that he's got to attend to, whatever. I just know that the collective bargaining rules state that he does not have to be here. Now, with that being said, with a new football team, you would like to have him start to attend and be present at some of these things to get to know his teammates so the teammates can get to know him. Because, I mean, he's a veteran guy. I mean, you'd like to have a veteran guy provide leadership to a very young football team. So you'd like to have that aspect of it. But, hey, you also know that you don't have to require him to be here. Now, and I had a conversation with Todd Walsh about this, yeah. who I have great respect for Todd Walsh. I think he's a fantastic defensive line coach. And trust me, I know a little bit about defensive line, right?
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
I think he's an outstanding coach, okay?
Okay.
And had a conversation because he obviously knows him very well. You know, Clem, that's what he called him, Clem. And so I was asking him, I said, you know, you'd like to get him here? He said, yeah, you know, you'd like to get him here. He said, but, you know, the one thing that he does not worry about, Clem, is that he's going to be in great shape. He's going to be ready to go when he gets here. So, and he used the term true professional. You know, that's what you want, right, on your football team. You know, and I go all the way back to, boy, the Coughlin days and when voluntary Uh-oh. Meant, you know, be here or, you know, look for another football team to play for. And Mickey Washington, who was a cornerback, who, by the way, is an attorney, works for a law firm in Texas now. I mean, super bright guy. Love Mickey. Well, Mickey never came to OTAs, you know, and but he always came back, and he might have been the most in-shape defensive back that reported to camp. And I had great respect for Mickey. You know, I had great respect that for first and foremost that he would defy Tom Coughlin, but more respect for him because when he came back in, he almost made it a point that when he came back, he was going to prove that he was the most in-shape defensive back that there was. You know, and I think a lot of players respected him for that.
Sure.
And but then when Tom Coughlin had an opportunity to get somebody else that was going to be here for OTAs, he got somebody else.
Did you miss? Do you ever miss, Jeff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't report to Stevens Point, Wisconsin in 1995 at the voluntary report date. You know, it was me, Joel Schmange, and Kelvin Pritchett ended up showing up. I think it was about 4 days late. But, you know, I went there on the mandatory report date. You know, which was that's what the rule book said, and that's when I got there.
So, by
the rules, I was there.
Well, what was the reasoning for you missing then, Jeff?
I didn't want to go to Tom Coughlin's two-a-day training camp in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, for an extra 4 days when we just had the baton death march in the off season.
That's fair.
Plain and simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
Yeah, but you know, he respected me for it, and I told him up front that I wasn't going to be there. It's not like I, you know, just didn't show up. I mean, he knew it.
Good enough. Yeah. First week in the books. We'll talk about what's coming up next week a little bit later on Jaguars Thursday. Also coming up, a look around the National Football League and the AFC South, a visit with Kyle O'Brien as well, Director of College Scouting. Join your Jaguars for OTA practice Thursday, June 5th at the Florida Blue Health and Wellness Practice Fields right next to Everbank Field. Gates open at 10:15. Practice will run from 10:50 to 12:50. Special appearance by the Roar, player autographs. Event is free, but all fans must register. Jaguars.com/register to get those tickets. That is Thursday, June 5th. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Phone lines are open on Jaguars Thursday, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman. Tony Vaselli on assignment tonight.
What did you say? He was at the Krispy Kreme.
Yeah, the hot
place?
Donut sign's on.
Yeah.
I'd stop, too. I'll be honest with you.
I would like to see how many boxes that he could eat. I'm not talking donuts. Yeah. I'm talking boxes. How many comes in a box? Is it 12?
Yeah, it's a dozen. Yeah.
Yeah, I guarantee you he could eat four.
Nobody
with a gallon of whole milk.
Yeah, we talk a big game when he's not sitting right here. Nobody helps you get ready for game day.
Maybe you do, but I'm not afraid to talk in front of him, though.
Nobody helps you get
ready. Speak for yourself there, JP.
Well, we'll see. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Coming up, the debut of Scout's Eye. Jeff Lagerman sitting down with a member of the personnel and scouting departments each week. And this week it's a man instrumental in each and every draft the last 2 years at least. Director of College Scouting, Kyle O'Brien. That's coming up next segment. Let's look around the National Football League. And the biggest news of the week goes down to Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers owner Malcolm Glazer passed away at the age of 85, the second league owner passing away this year. Bought the team in 95, the guiding force behind the Bucs' rise to relevance, really. 7 playoff appearances, 5 playoff wins, and the Super Bowl championship after the 02 season. He really got this Bucs organization turned around, a team that had been a loser for a long, long time, got him to prominence.
Well, and really did a really smart job by hiring Tony Dungy, and then a lot of people criticized him for firing Tony Dungy, but, I mean, he goes out and he gets John Gruden for draft picks, and what does he do? He wins the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, great collection of talent that was on that Buccaneers football team when Monty Kiffin was running the defense through both head coaches. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch that football team because they played a really good brand of football.
Moving on up to staying on the Glazers for a moment. Linda Glazer and the 5 sons and a daughter will continue to own and operate the team. Remember, they bought Manchester United in the Premier League back in 05, 5 Premier League titles in that time. They won Europe in 2008 as well. Now,
let me just add this too, in that, you know, there was a lot of controversy about the Glazer family owning, you know, a soccer team and a national football team, and you know, I got a little criticism from kind of both sides of the fence on that. But the way I understand it is that the Glazer family kind of had a plan in place, because a lot of times what you see happening with an owner of a National Football League team, upon their death, the tax consequences are so insurmountable that the team has to be sold. Mm-hmm. The way I understand it, that the Glazer family had prepared for that, so it looks like the ownership will remain stable with the Glazer family.
That's good. Good news.
That is good.
For the folks,
know, consistency
in Tampa
is always good.
No doubt about that. Let's move on up to Baltimore, where Ravens head coach John Harbaugh is, quote, very concerned with the Ravens' recent off-the-field incidents. We got Ray Rice with the assault charge. Rookie running back Lorenzo Taliaferro arrested for destruction of property and drunk in public. And then an offensive lineman caught in a brawl at a strip club a little while ago. I mean, and, of course, he's worried about the alcohol being involved in these incidents. What do you say? Is this a trend in Baltimore?
Well, I mean, it's starting to be a trend. And then you have to add in that 3 of Ravens players were actually kicked out of a bar for being drunk.
an old joke?
I mean, Baltimore is a pretty good city. I mean, the Inner Harbor, all that. But, you know, to get kicked out of a bar for being drunk, that's an accomplishment. I commend them.
Have you ever been to the Red Garter Saloon in Key West?
I have not.
I haven't either, but apparently Ja Reed has. That's where he got thrown out of.
Oof.
In Key West. We move on down to Dallas. Dallas Cowboys linebacker Sean Lee had that torn left ACL. He's going to miss the 2014 season, reportedly. But here's the question.
He's not going to be back. I mean, if you tear an ACL and have to have an ACL reconstruction, it would be insane to try to come back before the end of the 14th season.
It is, what, it's going to be June in 2-3 days.
Well, so, I mean, was it Jeremy Maclin, I believe it was, tore his ACL in camp, and he missed all of last year, and he's coming back full speed. There's no reason for Sean Lee to rush. Now, the issue now is that the Dallas Cowboys gave him a lot of money, gave him an extension, very, very profitable one for Sean Lee, and Sean Lee has yet to show that he can remain healthy to warrant that kind of money. So,
6-year extension last summer, up to $51 million, included a $10 million signing bonus too.
You know, Jeff. And that's why, from a player standpoint, they show me the money, right? They want to get as much upfront money and get that contract as quick as they can, because if something like this happens, you know, the guaranteed money starts to evaporate.
The question moving forward in this situation will be, will the players' union get involved in what is supposed to be a non-contact OTA session?
Hey, look,
where do you draw the line on non-contact?
It's football. Yeah. I mean, it's football. There's going to be some contact, but it has to be regulated. From the way I understand it, it was a non-contact injury, and that Sean Lee was going down. The knee had gave way before he made contact with their rookie first-round draft pick offensive lineman from Notre Dame. Is that right?
I believe, yes.
Yeah, so – but look, you know, the NFLPA is always going to kind of keep an eye on these things. But look, you could be out there playing beach volleyball, mm-hmm. which has happened before, by the way, and tear an ACL. It did with the running back that was the number first round draft pick of the New England Patriots years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, you don't know. I mean, it's football.
Didn't it happen at the Pro Bowl one year? They had like a flag football
Bowl,
game,
and that was a Pro Bowl volleyball.
That's
game.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's the one. The players' union apparently has not requested a videotape of the practice yet. Terms of the CBA say that can only be done if the union is alleging a violation. So we'll follow that moving forward. Let's move on around the AFC South on Jaguars Thursday. We'll start off in Houston, where Bill O'Brien told the Houston Chronicle this week the Texans' quarterback competition is wide open. Ryan Fitzpatrick signed in free agency, and three youngins too. Tom Savage drafted this year, Case Keenum, T.J. Yates. Who you like or don't like there, Jeff?
Fitzpatrick.
He's you like
gonna,
or don't like him?
He's going to win it.
He's got it?
Yeah, he's got too much experience. You know, the Houston Texans have too good of a football team to turn the reins over to a young quarterback with very little to no experience and not expecting to be the guy of the future. You're going to let an accomplished, established quarterback, and I'm not saying Fitzpatrick is great, but he's going to be able to get that team – a lot of wins because they have a lot of talent on that football team.
Moving on to Indianapolis, the head of the NFLPA, Damari Smith, said in an interview with ESPN Sal Palantonio that players want to know why Goodell still hasn't done anything about Jim Irsay, who was arrested in March. He faces charges of operating a vehicle while intoxicated and operating a vehicle with a controlled substance in his body. He called it, quote, a significant credibility gap.
Popping pills and drinking. I mean, you know, slam hammer drunk, you know, delusional, whatever you want to call it.
The idea
he's getting
is
criticized because Commissioner Roger Goodell has not acted and suspended Jim Irsay.
The question comes because they feel that players get punished a little quickly.
Well, they haven't done anything with the owner of the Colts yet.
Right.
You know, so let's have a little patience here. You know, Damari Smith. You know, let's wait and see what the commissioner finally does do before you react to something that hasn't even happened yet. What he's wanting is for the commissioner to act swiftly and immediately with an owner. Well, first of all, let the commissioner act first, but then secondly, isn't he one of your 32 bosses?
That's right.
You know, so I mean, I get that there's a little bit of a conflict of interest, but I think the bar was established by the NBA in that particular area recently.
Yeah.
With Mr. Silver.
That's right.
So Roger Goodell, he'll act, and I think it will be fair and it will be just. What is he going to do to him anyway?
Well, he won't make him run gassers like the Baltimore running back had to do. He had to run like 18 gassers.
What are you going to suspend his game check for, you know, or take away his check for 4 weeks? Right. So what? I mean, come on.
Let's move on to Nashville. Titans, it seems so Titans-like when you first read the headline. Quarterback Charlie Whitehurst entering his ninth NFL season. First in Tennessee, of course, throughout his college career at Clemson. and in the NFL. He's always worn the number 6. Until now, he lost the right to wear the number in an arm wrestling contest, reportedly. Punter Brett Kern beat him. Well, that was what was on the Twitter account for Charlie Whitehurst. Well, that news has come out now, a day later, that there was no contest at all. He just made the whole thing up.
Okay, if he made the whole thing up, here's my question. If you're going to make it up, say that I beat him in an arm wrestling contest, but then we had a coin flip after that, and I lost that. Because, you know, you're a backup quarterback, okay? And if you're a backup quarterback, you have plenty of time to do arms in the weight room, okay? So there's no excuse for you even thinking that you would lose or fake tweeting that you would lose an arm wrestling contest with a punter. That's embarrassing. You're the backup quarterback. Get in the weight room, lift some weights, and don't ever even jokingly say that you lost an arm wrestling contest to a kicker of any kind.
Apparently, backup quarterbacks and punters have time to tweet, too. That's for another topic for another time.
Come on, JP, tweeting.
I don't know. You need to get you on Twitter, man.
No.
Come on, we got to get you on there. It's easy. I can sign you up right now. I'll sign up a fake account for you. That's what I'll do.
Go ahead. Be the fake.
Somebody out there
tweeting
will.
Jeff. Whatever.
Be the greatest account ever. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. When we return, the debut of Scout's Eye. Jeff Lagerman visits with college scouting director Kyle O'Brien. That's after this. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. JP Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman on Jaguars Thursday. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Coming up, a visit with Kyle O'Brien, the director of college scouting for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a new segment on Jaguars Thursday. Jeff, you're going to sit down with a personnel man a week coming up.
Well, no, what we're trying to do is that every week when the Jaguars are on the field, OTAs, mini camps, to get some perspective from the Dave Caldwell scouting staff and get some insight on what they think about some of these prospects that they brought in, whether they be free agent guys from Chris Polian to college guys like we're going to talk about with Kyle O'Brien, but we'll talk with a number of different college and pro personnel people as the teams are on the field. And also, we also will have that as a video feature at Jaguars.com.
That'll be up there tomorrow morning. A little background on Kyle. He enters his second season as director of college scouting for the Jags, 13th season in the National Football League. Spent 10 years in the personnel department of the New England Patriots.
That's where he got all his gray hair from, by the way.
Probably, yes. Then maybe a couple Super Bowl rings, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that wrong. Then a year as a scout for the Chiefs before he came to Jacksonville. So
it's funny, too, because he grew up in Long Island, New York.
Okay.
Okay, and so obviously I was a draft pick of the Jets back in 89.
I heard about that.
And so when I finally got a chance to talk with Kyle not too long ago, he said, you came and talked to my school when I was a kid. I was like, what? I said, how old are you? And he's like 35 years old, so I'm 11 years older than him. So I was, 21, 22, 23 at the time. And, he's in, sixth grade or something like that. And here I was coming to talk to a school. It's kind of interesting how that happens. But anyway.
Did he remember what you talked about?
No. He just remembered that I was there, and it was a favorable impression, so I was all for that.
Did you have the long hair, memorable? I can see
probably the mullet at that point. But anyway.
Was it community service, Jeff? Let's be honest. It was.
I was on the chain gang, and they pulled up into the school and said, all right, get out and go talk to these kids.
Fair enough.
But anyway, here's the conversation with scouting personnel Kyle O'Brien. Welcome into this week's edition of Scout's Eye. And this week we're joined by Director of College Scouting, Kyle O'Brien. Welcome into the Scout's Eye.
I appreciate you all having me.
Congratulations to you and your wife. you first child, and it's a son, right?
Yeah, son. Finn Gabriel O'Brien. Yeah.
Awesome.
Irishman.
Today let's talk about some of the offensive draft picks, and we'll start in on the wide receivers. And today during the OTA, some of the wide receivers were actually at the rookie symposium, right, out West Coast?
Yes.
But let's start with Marquise Lee, the first of the two second-round picks, talented wide receiver from USC. had some issues last year, coaching changes, quarterback issues. But what did you see in Marquise Lee that really attracted you to him?
Explosiveness, just big playability. He's one of those guys who, you know, he just has the ability to take the roof off of a defense, whether it's on a nine route or if you hit him on a slant or a little hook. He has the ability in his rack to turn that small gain into a big gain.
All right, there's two things there I want to clarify for everybody because he's using some football terminology here. A nine route, which is a vertical go route. It just means put on the jets and go straight.
Just go.
And rack, which is
run after catch.
Okay, because a lot of people don't
know
that.
No, you're right, and I apologize.
No, that's good. I mean, that's what this kind of stuff is for.
Yeah. But, no, he has the ability to – he's got that home run ability. When he gets the ball in his hands, he has the ability to take it to the house.
All right, the one thing that I noticed from watching him on film, because I watched film on essentially all of your draft picks and the free agents you were able to acquire, he had some issues with drops his last year at USC.
Yes. You know, a lot of times you talk about some people just have – they struggle with catching skills. Hand-eye coordination, it just doesn't come natural to him, to some people. That's not the case with Marquise. Sometimes, and we talked to him about it at the combine, you know, he wanted to, you know, he has that big playability and he wanted to do it for his team. Sometimes he kind of put the cart before the horse and we call them concentration drops, mm-hmm. where he started turning look upfield before he really made sure he secured the ball. And that's one thing that Coach Sullivan is definitely working on.
Well, he's got one of the best wide receiver coaches maybe in the history of the game.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's certainly going to help. But when you talk about rack, I call it dynamic,
yes.
You know, the type of player that can make you hold your breath with the ball in his hands.
Yes. When you go to last year, you know, Marquise had some soft tissue injuries this year along with the coaching change and, you know, the new quarterback, the offense wasn't quite the same as it was 2 years ago. But when you look at the film 2 years ago, you know,
he was amazing.
It was pretty comparable to, you know, Sammy Watkins getting a lot of pub this year.
A lot of people say he could have been a first-round pick if he'd come out the year before. All right, let's move to your other second-round pick, Allen Robinson from Penn State. Holy cow. Since when does a Penn State wide receiver start catching nearly 100 balls?
Well, you know, Coach O'Brien, who I was with in the page, you know, he's just an outstanding coach, and he finds the players, and he's able to put them in the best position to make a play. And, you know, Allen was really their main weapon on offense, and teams, you know, other defenses tried to stop him, and he produced every game for him.
The thing that I really liked about him is the NFL has actually picked up a play that the colleges have run for a long time. It's that little quick screen.
Yes.
To the outside. And Allen has maybe the quickest first step of anybody running a quick screen. And I'm talking even better than the guy that the Buffalo Bills traded a bunch of picks for on that quick screen.
Well, you know, that's one thing. People think, you know, a wide receiver who's 6'0", 3'2", 220, you know, he's not just a possession guy. He has the ability to turn that short gain into a big gain. His run after catch is very good. Is very good. Not only you said like his quick step, his short area explosiveness, but he's smart. He sees the field. He has the patience to kind of allow the blocks to develop as well, and then he can kind of turn it up.
It's kind of funny. 6'0", 3'2". There's another scout term.
Yeah.
Because that's 6'3.2", right?
Yes.
Okay. I mentioned the hands with Marquise Lee. You know, everybody has something that they've got to work on, and with Allen Robinson, he looks very raw. And once again, working with a Jerry Sullivan, the route running and getting better at that seems to be an area that he's going to work on.
Absolutely. You know, a guy who's so big, he does have the ability to just drop his weight. He's got the natural athleticism to drop his weight and come in and out of cuts. But like you said, kind of working on tempo and stuff like that, Coach Sullivan is outstanding.
All right, again, our guest today, Director of College Scouting, Kyle O'Brien. Let's move to the offensive lineman, and we'll start with your third-round pick, Brandon Linder. And I've got a nickname for him because, you know, when I was watching, somewhat of a limited athlete, but then all of a sudden you turn on the tape and he's got great film against Florida State, Pitt, Notre Dame, which obviously had very high draft pick defensive tackles. And the nickname that I'm giving him, and hopefully it stays true once they get the pads on, is the phone booth mangler.
Yeah. That's pretty apropos. I mean, Brandon, for as nice a guy off the field, he's one of those guys who's able to flip that switch. And when he's got a little edge to him on the field.
He's got edge, and he's got power. He's got size. I mean, is that the prototypical right guard in the National Football League?
You know, I think he's a very good football player. And one of the things, he's smart, he's tough, and he's versatile. You know, you watch, you know, he would swing from right guard to right tackle
in the same game.
In the same game.
Yeah.
And he's also has the mental ability to play center if need be as well. But like you said, you know, he's, you know, for us, we're a zone scheme. So you got to have a certain level of athleticism, which he definitely has. But, you know, no matter what it is, zone run scheme, this is a passing league. And as mm-hmm. much as we drop back and throw the ball, those guys up front have to be able to drop their weight and anchor, which is what Brandon can do very well.
Does it very well. When I first watched the one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl, I kind of got a little concerned with Leonard because, you know, he had a little bit of a tough time. But, I mean, a lot of guys, I mean, once the bowl game's played, after that point, they're hanging around, like at least I was, drinking beer and hanging out, you know, eating dogs, you know.
You know, like you said, it's the Senior Bowl is obviously a huge key for us. We've, you know, we were able to get some really good players whom we felt were good, not only scheme fits, but organizational fits from our time spent with them at the Senior Bowl. But it's also one small part of the equation. And like you said, you first watch that and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Then you
throw on the game film.
And then you're like, okay, this is – now I can see.
All right, let's go to your sixth-round pick because, you know, I'm representing here. We got the Virginia shirt on here. Luke Bowanko, who's a guy that did not get invited to the combine. Correct me if I'm wrong, did not play in any All-Star games as well.
He did.
Played the NFLPA game, right?
No, not the NFLPA. It was a Medal of Honor.
Yeah, he's a guy that at Virginia played guard and center, moved around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys are projecting him as a center. What do you see in him?
Like, again, you know, people talk about traits for quarterbacks, but traits for the offensive line is just as important. They got to be smart. They got to be smart because they got to be able to adjust to different fronts. They got to be able to remember, you know, run, pass. And for someone who is the center, you're helping making all those calls, and that's definitely something Luke is able to do. He's, you know, UVA.
Went to Virginia,
UVA,
right?
You know, of course.
Well, just last question here, and first of all, appreciate you coming on. When you guys in the scouting department look at all of these prospects, because there's an amazing number of guys that you actually cover, are you looking for special traits, or are you looking for overall characteristics of a player?
Well, obviously, they have to have a certain level of athleticism. But to be perfectly honest with you, we are looking for a certain type of guy. Dave and Gus have done an amazing job of creating a certain type of culture around here. You know, Coach uses the term code black, mm-hmm. and we're looking for code black players. They got to be physically and mentally tough, and they got to have a true passion for the game. That, you know, That's code black, mm-hmm. and you know better than most. It's kind of surprising. There are a lot of players out there who are, you know, they're playing the game and they're good at it, but not as many as you would think truly have a passion for the game.
Because of just from experience, that passion enables the great ones to take it to the next level.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And Dave and Gus have created an environment where, you know, for people who love to compete, they're given the opportunity. And, you know, we don't care how you get here. But, you know, if you come out and you prove your salt and you love to compete, you're gonna have the opportunity to do well here. So, you know, we're looking for code black players.
All right. Thank you, Kyle, very much.
Thank you.
There's Jeff Loggeman with Kyle O'Brien, Jags Director of College Scouting. Interesting visit there. Code black at the end. You got to find a certain guy.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that they actually have termed it, you know, the type of player that they want. And it's also fun listening to a scout talk because he starts to use some terms sometimes that you're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, I know what they are, but I think a lot of people out there listening like to hear it and then also to hear it explained what it means. You know, like the nine route, which is, you know, vertical go route, can be down the sideline, can be up a seam.
Yeah.
And then a 6-0-3-2, which is, you know, because when the players go to the combine, they actually have a picture taken of them standing there in their tights, which is basically an underwear shot. And they have the player's name up on the board, right, and has the height, weight. And with the height, it's obviously very easy to figure out how that's given. It's, you know, 6'4", 6'3", and it's, you know, the one – denoting a foot, and then the inches, the two marks for the inches. Well, the weight is always or the height's like 6-0-3-2, like that, and then it has the weight. So it's interesting to hear those guys speak like that, though.
And a lot of places they're not allowed to speak at all.
No.
That's the great thing about Dave Caldwell.
And I
staff
appreciate here. That with yeah. Dave, and I think it's a great benefit to the fans and fans of the draft to be able to hear from some of the scouting department people and opinion and thoughts of what they have on certain players that are now on the roster. So I look forward to it because we should have many more to come, not only on the college side, but on the pro side of things as well.
And we'll have the video portion of that same interview tomorrow on Jaguars.com. So go there tomorrow morning. It should be up tomorrow. Well done. Scout's Eye. Look for that each and every week. There's something happening on the field.
Well, and it's a fun feature because, you know, we probably did a little bit too many guys today, but really focus in. And when we get the opportunity to have a scout who studied a specific guy, we'll really get in depth with that particular guy and find out, hey, when did you know about this guy? When did you find out about it? And at what point did you say, hey, to Dave Caldwell, hey, we really got to look at this guy?
Right. Interesting to see how that works inside that other side of the building over there, for sure. Visit Jaguars.com. Check out Inside the Jaguars, driven by Tom Bush. You'll get caught up in all the latest Jags news and a chance to win the ultimate Jags game day experience. The latest episode is up right now on Jaguars.com. It's so new, I haven't even watched it yet, Jeff. I taped the thing. I don't know what it's about.
I look forward to seeing
it. OTAs are complete. That's what it's about, at least week one of those. When we return, we'll preview the next week's OTA schedule, including which practice is open to the public. That's after this, Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Final segment of Jaguars Thursday inside the HananiaAutos.com studios at Everbank Field. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman. You just heard from Kyle O'Brien, Director of College Scouting for the Jaguars, and a new feature here on Jaguars Thursday, Scout's Eye with Jeff Lagerman. So look for that again next week. No early word on who you might project to be on
I'm working on a scouting diva. We'll see if that ends up coming through.
You know how divas are. They're tough to deal with. So good luck with that one.
It's an inside joke.
Oh, that's okay. We'll see if that pans out as the week goes along.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Jaguars Women's Club, presented by Steinmart and Culligan, created with a female Jaguars fan in mind. Members receive VIP treatment, includes custom membership kits, exclusive opportunities, and a forum to stay connected with the Jags. For more information, go to Jaguars.com/womensclub, and remember the NFL 101 event coming up October 16th. And more info coming soon on that. Next week, week two of OTAs, three more practices out of 10. It'll be Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And I guess the biggest storyline starting Monday will be, at least in the media, is Chris Clemens. 98% will be back here for the first time.
Well, and that's going to be something that, you know, once training camp opens up, it's going to be very interesting to watch. That's a lot of Leos on this roster.
You bet
now.
It is, yeah.
You know, with Clemens and Babin and Branch and
Ryan Davis,
who I think Ryan Davis is a really good football player. You know, you're talking, does a team look at keeping a Jason Babin and a Clemens, both that are up in age? I don't think so. You know, but, I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm not expecting it.
If a young guy falters, though, you have to, right?
Sure, if the young guy falters, but, you know, it's a young man's game. You know, I mean, Vic Ketchman used to say that repeatedly right there on that microphone, and he's right, especially in this instance. You know, and Branch showed great improvement last year, so that's going to be very interesting to watch. I mean, it's not something that we're going to see next week if all of a sudden Clemens is here for an OTA, but it's something that we will watch throughout training camp and to see which guy competes and earns it.
All the rookies should be back. The three that went to Los Angeles yesterday and throughout the weekend should be back and ready to go on Monday. Is there anything different in week two? Do they add anything to the scheme? Gus Bradley said today there's one day install, one day of just working on it, the next day's install again, which was today. You'd think Monday, if they keep that up, would be working on what they installed today. Does it ramp up intensity week two, or is it the same kind of
feel? It's about the same tempo, and you know, the tempo that they have in practice right now is really good. And for me, I love going out there and really focusing in and watching different position groups. And there's some guys that really stand out. You know, Cecil Shorts, like I said earlier, I thought he had a fantastic practice today. Andre Branch, to me, looks head and shoulders above where he was last year.
Really?
He looks a little thicker in his legs. His energy is high. His quickness is good. His get-off is good. And I understand that this is OTAs. There's not any pads on. But he looks like that he has elevated his quickness in his game a little bit. So that's going to be fun to watch when the pads do come on.
No, Cecil was on our show last week, of course.
Yeah, talking about his testicles.
Yes, he was. If you want to go to the archive, go ahead. But Gus Bradley said this week, it's obviously, and it's very obvious, it's Cecil Shorts the third up here at a different level. Everybody else competing amongst that wide receivers group. There's a lot of wide receivers in that group, too.
And I think it's a great situation to have because if I'm a coach or a general manager, I always want to have a situation how the room dynamic is going to play out for the year. And I think this is a really good dynamic in that you have a veteran guy, which would be Cecil, even though he's a very young veteran. But Cecil does things the right way. He practices exceptionally well. He works hard. He's committed. He carries himself off the field in great fashion. I mean, this is a great person to have as the leadership in that wide receiver room for some of these younger guys that are going to be learning this year. And also with the combination of Jerry Sullivan, who is arguably the best wide receivers coach in the world, that's a great situation to have.
With the young guys, it's you can see it. And just talking to a couple of the young guys, Robinson and Lee, in the locker room, there's sometimes some frustration because they see Cecil Shorts the third run a perfect route.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with them accomplishing that in OTAs. Exactly. I mean, this is something. This is a craft that Cecil's. I mean, Cecil is exceptional how he works at his game and at how he takes coaching from Jerry Sullivan. He's learned a tremendous amount, and it doesn't happen overnight. You know, and that's why I think Gus Bradley and coaches always talk about you got to continuously work at your craft. Cecil has been one of those guys.
The practice on Thursday, there's practices Monday and Tuesday. Those are, again, closed to the public. Wednesday, a day off, out, off the practice field at least, and then Thursday, the sixth OTA practice out of 10 for this offseason program is open to the public. Note the times. The gates will start. Gates will open at 10:15 a.m. The practice will run from 10:50 to 12:50, so 2 hours. Special appearance by the Roar. Autographs after. You have to register. Jaguars.com/register, as always. Have a ticket at hand. But the gates open at 10:15, and if the last rookie minicamp was any indication, that should be a very big day, Jeff.
It should be good, and you're going to get, I mean, the rookie minicamp, all you were looking at was rookies, and they will have had five OTA practices under the belt prior to that one that's open to the public. So
pretty smooth, right?
It should be pretty smooth by that point, and it's already pretty smooth, you know, but at least the rookies at that point will know exactly where they're supposed to be and kind of the routine from drill to drill.
It's pretty amazing.
Also, hey, by the way, I just wanted to make a comment and commend the Jaguars and Mark Lamping for the announcement that they had early this week about the practice down at Bartram.
Yes.
It's going to be held for a training camp practice, and I don't remember the exact date, but the Jaguars are going to basically take the whole team and staff and everything and go down to Bartram School and hold a practice. I think that's exceptional. I think that's a great idea.
Bartram Trail High School, July 28th, 7 p.m., that's a training camp practice for the Jags at Bartram Trail, and you know, all of Clay County, St. John's County will be there.
Yeah, right.
Wrong county.
Yep.
Of course, folks from St. Augustine, get over there easy. Green Cove, jump across the river. You're right there. Julington Creek, just head south. You're right there, too. It's going to be packed. It's going to be awesome.
I think it's a great thing to do to really kind of, I don't want to say rotate in the community, but, I mean, to get out in the community as often as you can. And the Jaguars have certainly done a great job with it. And to do something like this in training camp, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this to where you do that in a community. I think it's a great idea, and congratulations to them for coming up with the idea.
Jaguars Thursday brought to you by Fanatics.com. That'll do it for this week. Well done, Jeff, as always.
That means you'll be at Bartram July 28th.
I think you'll
be
there too, right?
Most likely.
We'll both be there. How about that? For Kyle O'Brien, our thanks to him for joining us on Scout's Eye. For Jeff Loggeman, for Joe Fortunato and everybody involved, this is JP Shadrick. That's it for Jaguars Thursday. We'll see you next week.